This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. We have Mr. Butch Campbell on today, and we're going to be talking about education, sports, and history, and just about everything that you can think of. And we want to let you know that the first part of this show is brought to you by At Home Care. When you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs. Their company is different than any other you see in the local marketplace because they're owner-operated by longtime Murfreesboro resident Melissa Warren. That means they're hands-on and involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. They provide their clients what they want most, to remain in their own homes as independently as possible with their own familiar possessions, neighbors, and schedules. What they do can't be learned from a book. It comes from the heart. They truly care. And you can reach them at 713-4639 or pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. Well, Butcher, it's always good to have you on.
Truman, it's good to be back up here with you.
It's always like old home week when
it
you come
is,
home.
It is. That is for sure. That is for
part
sure.
Part of the Mitchell Nelson, Murfreesboro Central, yeah, Tennessee State crowd.
All the activities that go along from years past that we we've been through and done. And many times I think, you know, back when I was 7th and 8th grade, I could tell you just about where every street in this town was.
Oh, I guarantee you could.
But you couldn't
you
do
knew,
it now.
You knew who was in every car it went
just
by.
Just about. Too. Just about. That's true.
Now, of course, you've been involved in education a long time, and, of course, going to school here, it must be kind of a big eye-opener for you to stay with it all the time and see all the major changes that have happened in the classroom.
It is. You know, and you and I were talking before the show started about how things used to be done in classes and how it could be done, and I think sometimes we have taken the teacher initiative out in some cases because people are more concerned about those overall test scores, and I'm not too sure every child needs to be concerned about tests, but no. I also understand competition that we have worldwide on getting jobs and technology and those sort of things, so we have to keep up with it some, but I'm not too sure we're in the best mode and best process in doing it now. I thought what we had was pretty good.
You know, I find it kind of amusing that after all these years of experience and you've been on the school board the way you have, you still have to go to seminars to find out what's going on so that you can do your job as a school board member. That's kind of interesting.
Well, and we just had the Tennessee School Board Association fall meeting or summer meeting, Summer Law Institute it's called, in Gatlinburg, Thursday afternoon, all day Friday and Saturday morning. And of course we were in sessions listening to speakers talk about not only evaluation but the virtual schools and all the other things that are involved in education today, up-to-date information on laws that the legislature passed and things along that line. And as far as going to those and learning about those things, it really is helpful. A lot of it, because of my background, I'm a little bit more aware of it maybe than some people who get on school boards. But you still can go back and remember. And with some changes, it's good to have. And sometimes you understand why the change is, and sometimes you don't.
Well, maybe being away from the classroom when all you guys and gals are getting together and talking about education, do you ever discuss any of the changes that are going on and how in the world can you get what you feel like is the best thing for the kids in the classroom out to the people who actually make all the rules and the laws?
Well, yes, we do. We do that often. And in fact, I was real pleased in the session Thursday afternoon that they had, that they encouraged us as school boards to meet with our area legislators, our state senator, our state representatives, mm-hmm. sometime before a session starts, and they go back second week, I think, in January, and to get together with them and let them know what we're looking at and what we'd like to see done, and with some of the members from the Rutherford County School Board there, we all got together and have pretty well decided that we're going to have a joint meeting between the two school boards sometime in November.
Great.
And invite our county and area legislators to come in, and we can give them an idea of things that we're looking at, we'd like to see done, and maybe they can give us an idea on some things that might be coming up in the next session. I think it'll be very beneficial, and I'm real tickled that we're going to be able to do that, and I think we are sometime in November.
While you were talking about that, all of a sudden I started envisioning you guys at one of the larger places, one of the larger schools, getting together with the school board members from the county and the city and the superintendents and the principals and the teachers, and not just present-day teachers, but past-day teachers who have retired.
Sure.
And bring them on in, and I guarantee you it would probably be a very lively conversation.
Well, it probably would be in some cases. I'm sure it would, because there would certainly be a wide variety of ideas. Mm-hmm. But
don't you think that's what our political leaders need to hear? They need to listen to the people that are right there in the middle of the war zone rather than those who don't have a clue what's going on.
I agree 100%. I really do. The person that's, and I used to always say, you know, when I was my term at Walter Hill as principal, and if our test scores were good or if the school did something good, and, you know, you might walk up and say, well, congratulations, Butch, y'all did well. You know, Truman, it's not me. Mm-hmm. It's those teachers out in those classrooms and in the trenches, so to speak, that that's what makes the difference,
right,
for young people today. It's not the principal. It's not the superintendent. Now, they are the leaders, and they try to guide and give suggestions and things like that. But I always wanted to be as much involved with teachers as possible to get their ideas on whether it be new ideas or old ideas. You know, new textbooks, old textbooks, how to do this, how to do that. It was always, I thought they knew more about it than I did, even though I had been in the classroom, you know, for 10 years, but at the same time, they were there today, and they knew exactly what was going on. They knew a whole lot more about what Joe and Connie were doing in class than I did, because they're with them every day.
You know, when these kids come up to you that haven't been in your school for 15, 20, 25 years, and have become successful or have gone on to something that they have really enjoyed in life, when they come and talk to you, they don't say, well, I'm glad that you helped me get an A in class, or you helped me get a B plus or whatever in class. They're going to talk to you about the leadership experience that you have taught them, and how to be a man or how to be a lady, and all those other things in the growing up process. That's what I think. I've heard it time and time again when I've been around teachers and students that they had many years ago come up and just say, what a joy it was to be in your classroom, and thank you for all that you did in my life.
Yeah, and I've had some of those lately. In fact, my wife and I have started volunteering at the hospital one day a week to drive the shuttle bus. And in the three or four times we've done it lately, and we only do it once a week, but during those times, I've seen four or five former students.
Wow.
Now, I might not recognize them. And really, I don't. But they recognize me, and, you know, it's, oh, how are you doing? It's good to see you. And then you ask them, well, what are you doing today? You know, what kind of work are you doing? And they're doing a variety of different things, mm-hmm. and that always makes you feel good. And it would be the same for you if you had a person that had been a little bit of a problem while you were sheriff and you had helped along the way. You know, it kind of makes you feel good, and you realize that you've done something to help somebody, and that's what it's about.
I had rather hear those things, the positive things, that they feel like that we've contributed their life, than send somebody off for 30 years or life or whatever. I mean, you're doing the community a service for that, but just for the personal benefit of it, I enjoy those type of things because it makes you feel like that you, maybe you did make a difference.
I saw one yesterday at the grocery store, and I don't mind mentioning the name, Pat Newman, who was a fantastic student, and I think the world of Pat. And I was in the line checking out at Kroger's, and somebody bumped my cart, and I turned around, and it was Pat. You know, and that's, those are the things that make you feel good because at least they're remembering you, and they can laugh with you, and they can have a good time. And and then there was a boy I saw about 3 or 4 months ago at a little market, and he was standing there, and he punched me, and he said, "Are you Mr. Campbell?" And I said, "Yes, I am." I said, "And who are you?" And he told me who he was. And we talked, and I can remember going to his house one night. His father called me about 11 o'clock, and I may have told you this story, but Dad and he were sitting at the kitchen table, and Dad was really letting him have it with all kinds of verbs and adjectives that, I wouldn't have used. And I kind of felt sorry for him, but he went on and he got through Walter Hill and all, and when he bumped me, I said, "Well, what are you doing there? Where have you been so long?" He said, "Well, Mr. Campbell said, I just got out of prison. I've been there the last 20 years. And I said, "I'm sorry." He said, "Well, that's okay. I did something wrong, and I served my time. But, you know, Truman, it made me feel good that he would speak to me, and me not knowing who in the world he was, but at least he remembered that I was there and I was trying to help him, and hopefully we made a difference somewhere. He could have been in prison a lot longer had it not been. But, you know, those are the things that, I think are rewarding for any of us who deal with people.
Sometimes people have so much against them in their lives. Just to have that one time or that one person who made a positive influence in their lives, that really speaks volumes. It reaches out more than anything else. Whether they have a group, they're still they're trying to help him, and they know or her that everything's going wrong. When you get that one person that will step up when everything else seems to be just coming down hard on you.
I think you're exactly right. I spoke to the sixth grade class at Black Fox this year on their graduation.
Now, how was that?
Well, it was good, and I didn't speak to them about grades. I talked to them about manners and getting along with people and being nice to people and what they needed to do and the old, I guess it's the
old things that we took for granted.
The things we took for granted, the yes or no, sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am. Yeah. And encouraged them to do well and went so far as to, I had some cards printed up when I started working with student teachers. And I gave every one of them a card and had my name, my address, my phone number, my email address. You know, just in case you get somewhere and you can't find anybody else to call, or just if you need somebody that you want to talk to, just, you know, give me a call. Well, I'm not the world's answer to people like that, but if it's a young person who needs some help and they want to talk to somebody, and you would be the same way, if, you know, if somebody called you and wanted to talk to you because they'd gotten in trouble with the law or whatever, and you could counsel with them or you could talk to them a few minutes, you'd be glad to do so. And I think most everybody who works with people in the public, particularly young people, I think we're all ready to do that and help if we can.
You know, you and, let's say, Larry Stewart, you guys are from the same cloth because you're in charge of kids' lives. And it's not just while they're in that school or while they're in the classroom. It's afterward. You give your phone number and say, if you need anything, if you're having trouble with anything, as you go on to either higher education or another job or whatever, or you're having family problems, give me a call. And, you know, in your particular job as a school board member, You deal, and you don't grade the principals, I don't think, or the teachers or anything like that. Oh, you would the superintendent. But do you have much contact with the principals that are in the city school system in dealing with them and maybe get some of their feedback?
Try to. And I've had several teachers since I've been on the board that have contacted me about their frustration level about whatever it may be, whether it's evaluations or new adoption series. You know, I had a lady stop by our house one night who's a friend of ours. And she spent about 45 minutes in our living room with Janie and I, and just crying her eyes out. This was about midway through the school year last year, because she was frustrated and didn't know what direction to go. And not that I've got all the answers, but she wanted somebody that she could vent to, and we were there, and she could. And I think I hoped anyway that we kind of calmed her down some before she left. But those are the things. But we would.
Those are the things that you need to have in those meetings when you sit down with the people who are making the system the way it is in the schools now. It's just that they need to hear that from the people like them, the ones that can relate back what their particular classrooms are having to deal with right now. I can tell you, when we first started the school resource officer program many years ago, I didn't have a clue at the level that the schools were in at that time. I knew that we were starting to have some problems, and basically discipline problems at that time, and you remember that well. But when we decided to go into that, I actually went into some of the schools, and I was a little bit changed when I walked in those classrooms. I really was. It's a tough proposition when you're a teacher in those schools right now. And we were talking about that at a birthday party. My great-nephew Jack, Mike's grandson, and it was his birthday. And we were talking about some of the things that are in the classroom. And it is so difficult to go in there, especially if you're a young teacher and you're seeing discipline problems there, that's going to be, in some respects, almost impossible to handle.
And young teachers get frustrated.
Yes.
Because maybe they didn't see that.
Even afraid at times.
Yes. Maybe they didn't see those behaviors when they were doing student teaching. And I didn't. And you didn't when you were patrolled. No. You didn't see the problems that you saw when you became sheriff, you know. No. And those are things that you have to remember. But at the same time, you can remember some of the things that you saw early on and try to relate the two together, and in a lot of cases it does that, and it helps. You know, the being in the trenches means a whole lot more, I think, than what you're going to get out of a textbook.
You know, you just came back from Gatlinburg at your seminars, and do you get a lot of feedback across the state from some of the ways that they're having to relate to education, just like you are here? Are they having the same type of difficulties? I presume that they are.
They are. They are. And particularly with the evaluation model, and that has been beat to death, I think, in the last year. You know, the old term about beating a dead horse. Mm-hmm. But because of that, there are some changes that are going to be made in that evaluation process. And some changes have already been made, and I think had that not been done, had people not voiced their concern and their opinion, I don't think we would have had those changes. Now, some of those changes might not have needed to be done had those people who were making the decisions about that model had first talked to some of those people that were out in the classroom or in the trenches that were going to have to deal with it each and every day.
Yeah.
You know, it's
you've got all kinds of ideas and all kinds. You've got all types of schools. You've got the private schools. You've got they're talking about putting charter schools in, and then of course you've got McFadden and Reeves Rogers
Magnet schools,
and Central Middle, and now partially high school.
One of the big things coming on now is the virtual school.
Now tell me about that.
All right, the virtual school basically is a school where a student can go and can do their classes or some of their classes basically by, you and I are going to call it correspondence, but through the internet and through the computer.
Whoa.
And they really don't even have to attend that school a day of class at all. They can do it from home, from a computer. Now, a lot of the concern about that today is, where does the money go that comes from the state for that particular student? Mm-hmm. If the local school system is not going to get that revenue, then who does get it? And why should not the local school district get it? However, you could have a child who would be zoned, I guess, for a school in Bedford County and could do a virtual class through the internet through Rutherford County.
That's almost like everybody being homeschooled.
Well, it's exactly right. You're exactly correct.
But think how much they're missing out on.
That's another big thing. And then you look at it also, and of course homeschooling is the same thing, all right? You were an athlete in school, and let's say you're homeschooled or you're doing virtual school curriculum. Can you play sports at the school you were zoned for?
Mm-hmm.
Some systems say yes, and some say no. I think that's a big discussion with the TSSAA at this point in time, and I'm not really sure what they have done in regards to that. I know there was some discussion last year about the homeschool student, but the virtual school student could be the same. And you could be a junior in high school, and you could take a senior class, basically helping you to graduate early. And then, of course...
Well, one of the biggest problems that I have heard people say over the last few years is that one of the big problems is that you do not... Both parents are either working or there's a single parent, and they're not able to have any input because of their time restrictions and other responsibilities to their child. This makes it, to me, seems like that they're even more at risk now with not having a teacher involved in their lives.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, some schools now have come up with an agreement that the parent will sign at the beginning of the school year, or some systems, I guess I should say, where the parent is saying, yes, I will spend X number of minutes or hours of the day or whatever with my child.
Whoopee, I'm on my honor system.
Well,
I will
you
do
know,
that. Yeah.
What's happened to the mom and dad just being able to sit down with you and help you a little bit? Now, mom and dad may both work, single parent maybe, but Truman, we've had that going on for years. Mm-hmm. We've had single parents before. We've had mom and dad working and the child still going to school.
Where did they get that idea from? All of these correspondence schools that you can get a college degree at now?
I guess. I'm not.
It seems like sometimes we're trying to find more and more ways to save money and take a burden off of maybe some of the taxpayers who don't have kids or grandkids in school or whatever, and people, I mean, of course, education does take up the bulk of the tax money.
Sure.
But at what point are you going to say, well, we're not going to work that hard, or we're not going to pay the money needed to give our kids an education? It doesn't seem the right thing to do.
It doesn't seem to be the right attitude to take, does it?
No, it doesn't.
You know, it's not the child's fault that they're here.
No.
Mom and dad need to think about that.
And the children today deserve to have the quality education or a chance at quality education the same as we did.
That's exactly right. I agree 100%. They do.
Well, you're on the school board, Big Bear.
Well, there are a lot of things, as you know, flows downhill, you know. How many times did you have rules and regulations that came to you, not necessarily from the state, but from the federal government?
Oh, yes. We all have things thrown at us that we have to stomach. I mean, that's just part of it.
And particularly when you're working, I guess I'm going to say, with and as part of a government entity.
Yeah.
Now, private business may be a little bit different. But in the line of work that you were in, the line of work I was in, and we depended on public dollars, we depended on state dollars, federal mm-hmm. dollars. That's the reason today that we've got this, or last year, we got this new evaluation model, was so that the state of Tennessee could qualify for that $500 million from the federal government. That's the only reason. I heard that. Well, in fact, we had a representative, state representative, who spoke to us on Thursday afternoon, and that was one of the things he said. But we did it, so now we've got to adhere to it and do the best we can with what we got.
As a principal, and you were a good principal, well, a very good principal, over at Walter Hill, and if you were still in that position, how in the world would you deal with all the changes for the teachers, knowing that a large number of them are probably thinking about maybe readjusting their career and going somewhere else?
Well, what I tried to do was, as I said a minute ago, I tried to let teachers have a voice in decisions that were made within the building. Mm-hmm. Now, there were some decisions that were made that we had no control over, whether it came from the local or the state or the federal people. But some of those things that we had some control over, or maybe, how do we do this? You know, how are we going to combat this new curriculum? And what are we going to do with that? And, well, Butch, I really need to have a computer in my room, another one. Well, you know, if a teacher could come to me and convince me that they needed something, I had no problem getting it for them. Mm-hmm. I had a speech teacher came in one day years ago, and the first thing she said to me was, "Butch, I know you're not going to let me do this, but..." Well, and she took a few minutes, and I said, "You're right, I'm not. Now, when you can come back to me and justify it, okay." 2 days later, she came back, different attitude, and justified to me, and I said, "Let's buy it."
Perfect.
You know, you got to need it. Wants are one thing and needs are another. And as far as children go, if the need is there and we can afford it, that's what we need to do.
You know, we've had such a special community all these years. You and I grew up here and been here all of our lives, except when we were in the service or when we had to be out for a specific short time. But it was so great this last Friday having the class of 50, 51 football team in here. Really great bunch of guys. And Mr. Jolly, it was his day to be one of the guests. And we had them all in, and you have never heard so many tales. And what a good time. I grew up listening to them play ball and watching some of it at the games. And it was so special for me. And it just shows you the deep roots that we have here. That type of relationship still carries on. And all those guys that came in from everywhere, and we all had lunch together, and it was such a great time. And, you know, that's one of the things that makes this community great, because, and a lot of that goes back to our school system at that time and what it meant to them and all the lessons it taught them.
You're right. I agree 100%. I can remember, and golly, I go back, and you can name these people better than I can, but, of course, my dad had a place up on the square next door to Altman Jewelers or Ben Franklin, and there were policemen, and there was Mr. Jacobs. Yes. There was Baskin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember Wyatt Earp's real name, but I remember him, tall and lanky, and that's what we called him. And it was fine with him, Cecil Lamb, and all those kind of people. I think, Truman, that was one reason why I was so much in favor of the school resource officer program, mm-hmm. when you started it.
Yeah.
And that was one reason I really wanted one at Walter Hill. And Eddie Farmer was our first one and was fantastic.
Did a great
I thought
job,
he really did. But I wanted students out there to have the same relationship with officers that I had with these people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, it was a small town. Dad was on the city council for a while, and he was uptown business, and I saw these people a lot. You know, after a city council meeting, you walk across the street to Shacklett's and get an ice cream or something, mm-hmm. you know, with all the city, that sort of thing. Those are things that young people today need to be able to do and not be thinking that just because they see somebody in a patrol car that they're an enemy.
Well, that
they're
that,
only an enemy
right.
if you do something wrong. If you don't do something wrong, you know, you're fine.
Well, it comes from sometimes it comes from attitudes of very few officers that really want to maintain that type. And then it'll come from parents who say, now, if you do something wrong, I'm going to get that officer, and he'll take you to jail or whatever. You automatically set up a relationship that's not going to be very well. You know, Brian just popped in, so we're going to have to take a quick break. Uh-oh. And we'll be right back with you with Butch Campbell.
Hello, Rutherford County. This is Greg Brooks asking for your vote for road superintendent. As a second-generation road builder, I was raised in the business of road construction. I started young at B&M Paving and was fortunate enough to gain the knowledge and experience necessary to be Rutherford County's next road superintendent. I can keep our roads safe and trouble-free with the least possible expense to the taxpayer. Please vote for me, Greg Brooks, for road superintendent.
Early voting from July 13th through the 28th, Election Day, August 2nd.
I'm Greg Brooks, and I approve this message.
The Bunganut Pig is back and better than ever in the borough.
My name is Mary Fugit. I work for TriStar Title Company, and I had to come today to the Bunganut Pig because when my husband and I had our first date a couple of years ago, he brought me here for drinks and dancing, and it was the best time.
Join the Bunganut Pig every Tuesday night for live music. The Bunganut Pig on Northfield in the Georgetown Square.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS, the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, and AmeriCare Pest Control.
I've got pests.
AmeriCare is Rutherford County's number one choice in pest control, and it's simple to see why. After calling 893-7111, their staff came to my house 8 years ago when I had an insect problem. They looked at the situation, showed me the areas, and what they'd recommend to resolve the problem. After treatment and with quarterly checks, I'm bug, critter, and creepy crawly free. Thanks, AmeriCare.
Call the best of the best to get rid of your pest.
AmeriCare, 893-7111.
Let's check our Good Neighbor events for the coming weekend. Starting at 9 o'clock Friday morning until 5 in the evening, this coming Friday through Sunday at Oakland's Historic House Museum, you're invited to step back in time 150 years. Some interesting exhibits to see there, and special guided tours. And the Musical 13 continues at the Murfreesboro Center for the Arts, 7 o'clock Friday and Saturday, and a 2 o'clock matinee on Sunday. And another musical, Legally Blonde, wraps up Saturday at the Arts Center of Cannon County, 7:30 on Friday and Saturday night. The new Blackman Blaze Youth Football and Cheerleading League is signing up at Blackman High School Saturday from 10 until 2. And the Parkinson Support Group meets at 1:30 Saturday at the St. Clair Street Senior Center. And remember, early voting is going on right now through July the 28th. Check our website, WGNSradio.com, under Local Events for each day's time and voting locations. On hot days, call your senior citizen friends and loved ones to be sure that they're okay. And if they need a fan or an air conditioner, get in touch with Dwight Ogleton at the Cool Aid Program. His number is 818-2459. Those are Good Neighbor Events.
Online bidding is now underway on Absolute Estate Auctions at ReliantRealtyAuctions.com. Three tracks located at 7155 Bradyville Pike. Selling regardless of price, no reserve, no minimum. Bid now at ReliantRealtyAuctions.com on the flattest, cleanest, best piece of land on Bradyville Pike. Multiple soil sites on each track, one including a home. See it now. Bid now at ReliantRealtyAuctions.com through Thursday, July 19th.
For the best portraits, choose Gordon and Ralston Photography, one of the most highly awarded photography studios in Murfreesboro.
I'm Larry Ralston of Gordon and Ralston Photography. We've done third generation weddings, you might say. Started out photographing a lot of the weddings, and they've had children, and I photographed their children's weddings. And we keep having a repeat business through the years and doing a lot of family photography as well.
My name is Al Gordon. I'm with Gordon Ralston Photography. Weddings is my passion. I've been photographing weddings for many years, probably close to 1,000 weddings, but everyone is different. Everyone is fun, and I enjoy sharing that energy with them during the day. It's just sharing a little bit of their passion and capturing their love and their love for each other.
Call Gordon and Ralston Photography today or visit them online at gordonralstonphoto.com. Their number is 396-8776.
knows Rutherford County as good as anybody. Truman Jones. It's the Truman Show here on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with Butch Campbell. I want to let you know that this part of the show and his show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. And when you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything from the simple oil change to major auto repair. Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, you turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's onto Ridgely Road. You have some people to say hello to.
I do, and I will preface this. We were talking about class reunions, and yes. I will say this, that the Central High School class of 1963.
Ooh, that's an old bunch.
That is an old bunch. 50-year reunion will be next year, and we are meeting at my house August the 1st, and Mike Fitchhugh, mm-hmm. who worked for you, was president of our class. And I called him the other day.
That.
Yeah. And
Middle
I called him the other day, and he answered, and I said, "Is this the grandfather of the most beautiful granddaughter in the world, or that I've ever seen?" Something. He said, "Yes, it's the most beautiful one and the only one." And I said, "Well, she is a very beautiful young lady. Let me tell you, she's not, but I don't know, several months old, but she is a very attractive girl." Well, I want to say hello today to my most beautiful granddaughters who are 17 years old, Alana McKenna Johnson, and I'm sorry, Mike, but mine outdo yours at 17. Maybe yours will be there when she gets to be 17.
Did you say two at 17?
Two. Twins.
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 Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And they're both very much involved in horses, and they ride, and they compete. They're both very, very to me, and I'm not prejudiced, but I think they're beautiful. Both of them are.
Did you buy them the horses?
No, I didn't. I did not.
I'm kind of surprised.
I probably could have if I'd known it. It would have been cheaper to buy them than it would to keep them up, I think.
Mm-hmm. At 17, right?
At 17. But they've been riding, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years. They do some 4-H things, and they compete in some other activities as well with the horses. But they're the apple of this old man's eye, I tell you, young ladies. They are really, they're fantastic.
I tell you what you could do instead of buying them, kind of like a horse, you could buy them a couple of Mustangs or a Corvette or something like that.
Oh, you're talking about the horses on wheels. You're not talking about the ones on legs.
I think that's the granddaddy's responsibility,
well,
actually.
You know, that might be able to be worked out a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Now, we were talking.
We can talk about
we can go
that
all
later.
We always go all the places. Yeah.
You're going to get me in trouble in a minute.
But one of the things, you were going back to the police officers earlier, and I can remember some of my heroes around the square, as same ones that you were mentioning earlier. And I remember one in particular, Mr. Cecil Lamb, and we were talking about it off the air. To tell you how things used to be, everything was almost like everybody's business. You knew everybody, and anybody that was older than you in any type of authority was just like your mom and your dad. And I can remember going way too fast. We were going to the Walter Hill area to swim, and there was four of us in the car, and I was driving, and I went past those two ropes where it signifies that you just went past radar back then at that time. And there was the blue light going on, waiting for me, and my heart stopped. I mean, I knew I had it. My dad was going to kill me, and I was going to get a bad ticket. Mr. Lamb came over as gentle as he could be and explained to me what I was doing wrong, which I already knew, of course. But with him telling me that influenced it more, because here he was, a man that I really respected, telling me what I needed to do, slow down, don't get killed, don't kill anybody else, and have yourself a great summer. And when he let me go, that was one of the things that I will remember all of my life. If I had gotten a ticket that time, I would have probably forgotten it. But since he took the time to explain that to me and to let me kind of take some responsibility on myself, It really did. And that's the way law enforcement was back then. That's the way teaching was back then. All the people that had great influence in your lives were there with some common sense and had the information that they needed to share with you to make sure that your life was going to be better.
That's true. You know, Mrs. Lamb was kind of the city police representative mm-hmm. when Central High School Band went on trips. And I can remember him going on, I think he went to Washington with us for the Kennedy inauguration and maybe for the Cherry Blossom Festival too. But just as nice as he could be, and you got to know him mm-hmm. as a person as well as a police officer, and you had the respect for them. When I was younger, many years younger, before all the houses out around what we knew as Todd's Lake.
Oh, yes.
We were, my wife
is there
today,
any water in there now?
Yeah. And my wife of today and I were out watching the submarine races.
Oh.
And an old 51 Chevrolet I had, and lights come up, and we thought, they were just kind of dirt roads, but I tried to, what I thought, outrun, but mm-hmm. I finally stopped, and I don't remember which officer it was came up, and I rolled the window down. He said, said it's just a little camel. Come on, let's go. Butch, be careful, will you? And off we went. But, you know, there again, that's the part of the hometown thing that you had, and you eventually respected that person because you remembered how nice they were to you.
It gave you a sense of security and a sense of well-being. It really did.
It did. It really did.
And I can remember there were some infamous people during the time that we were growing up that sometimes took the wrong path. It didn't make them mean or anything like that. A lot of times they just made poor decisions.
True.
And you would never treat them any different than you would anybody else, because I remember those days very well. Because, you know, but for the grace of God, I would be in the same situation they would be. And you always have to put yourself in somebody else's shoes before you make any type of decision. And sometimes we don't seem to take time for that anymore.
You know, Truman, we have talked so much about education and old times and how it was when we were there. And I hope that we have people who are responsible for young people today in our times today. I just hope that we've got young people who will grow up and have the same thoughts and respect and good times and some bad times too, but they will still have the respect for those people that they are being taught by today.
Now, are you still going to be working at MTSU this year?
Basketball?
Yes.
I hope so.
Yes.
I hope. Nobody's told me any different. I'm planning on it.
That's kind of become your second career, hasn't it?
Well, it has. It has. It's. I've been doing it since 1977, and I have enjoyed it.
35 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the times there and the basketball games and the different coaches and the fans and the players. And I ran into Bevis. I can't remember her first name now. Who played at middle. Mm-hmm. Saw her the other day at water aerobics. And she came up to me and spoke to me, and I hadn't seen her in a long time. She's teaching now, I believe, at Barfield, she told me. But, you know, that was one. Anne-Marie Lanning, I remember her. Mm-hmm. Of course, there were others that played out there from Murfreesboro and some not from Murfreesboro. But even some, you know, some of the men that played, Mike Buck, I refereed for him when he was coaching up at, he was at Pickett County for a while, and always was a good time going back and seeing him and remembering some old times and things like that. But it's been fun. I have made some friends and hope that I'm going to keep them as friends.
You will. Who are some of your more interesting people that you've met at MTSU over the years right there at Courtside? Because I know that we've had a lot of national games come in here, and some of them, the guy that's always just so hyper and animated when he's calling games, basketball games, you know who I'm talking about. He did I know he did a couple of the national games here, the regional games when he came in here. I got to talk to him, and I cannot think of his name.
Not Tom Eads.
No. This guy's really animated. He just fired up. They asked him a question, and here he comes shooting off the mouth and ready to go. I talked to him outside the gymnasium.
Curtis Shaw, was it?
No.
Are you talking about a fan?
No, I'm talking about an announcer.
Oh, an announcer.
He's a national announcer. Oh. Basketball, primarily college. And I wish I could think of his name, because I talked to him outside the gym when I came in, and just so nice and laid back. He wasn't a bit like I thought I'd be dodging every time he'd start talking, but it didn't turn out that way. I guess it's probably his persona for television, because he wants to keep everybody so involved in the game.
Involved and fired up, I guess.
Yeah, when he's there.
Some of the ones that, of course, that I get to know, or that we've gotten to know, particularly some of the officials that come in there. Of course, I mentioned Tom Eads a minute ago, and I'm partial to Tom, I guess, because I refereed with Tom. Of course, you had Russ Pulley, has done very well in college football.
Russ is a great guy.
Sure is.
Of course, he was one of the best FBI agents ever was.
You're exactly right. Burl Crowell.
Oh, yeah. Burl was great. He's a legend.
He is. I visited Burl before he passed away at his house in Manchester one time. And he was in a room about like a two-car garage.
Wow.
And I'm telling you, Truman, there was memorabilia and pictures everywhere. And that just, of course, used to have some principal meetings at the TPS in Nashville when Burl was there. And I remember one day we were talking to him, and his suitcase was sitting there, and somebody said, "Where are you going tonight?" He said, "Oh, I don't have one scheduled, but I always keep it packed. I'm ready to go," whatever they call. People like that.
That's kind of a pressure job, the one that you do, because you have to be alert every second, every millisecond, actually, because now the camera is on the clock continuously, and they hear the horn or when you push the button and all that other stuff. That's got to be tough.
Well, it can be. You just have to keep toned in, and I'm the first to tell you that sometimes we make mistakes, and I guess the biggest one that we made, or I made, was last year in the NIT games. You know, we were playing, was it Minnesota?
Minnesota,
yeah.
Yes.
And there were 12 seconds that ran off, and don't ask me what happened, because I can't tell you. I didn't know it until Chris Massaro called me.
I can't remember. That was against us. That wasn't for us.
It was not
home cooking.
It was when I believe Dendy was going to the free throw line. He was fouled, and the camera showed the clock, and then it came back and showed him shooting, and the clock was still running, and about 12 seconds had run off. And
I think the assistant was over there hollering at
somebody. No, nobody ever said anything about it during the game.
Oh, really? I thought somebody waving their arms.
No. And in fact, Chris Massaro told me that they didn't know it until somebody called, because they'd seen it on TV. Mm-hmm. I had a hard time believing it until I saw
it. Yeah, that's a shock. Yeah, I mean, it had to have been for you, because...
Well, I mean, nobody at the table knew it. The officials didn't know it, because I talked to them a day or two later. In fact, I called one of them who was working with Tom Eads up in the finals, and he didn't know it. And I talked to the radio people. They didn't know it. They didn't catch it. So it was a... But I guarantee you one thing, it won't happen again.
Oh, don't say that. Don't say that.
I can't let it happen again. Well, let's say I hope it doesn't happen again. I don't want it to happen.
That's a lot of pressure, big boy.
Well, I know it, but still, you know, it's you know what's there when you take on the responsibility to do it, and you do it.
You're human.
I agree.
And over the years, human factor has won a lot of games. It's lost a lot of games over the years, and then they come up with instant replay and all the other things that where they've got your whole life just right in front of you. You know, I have a lot of reasons for being for instant replay, but I've got a lot of reasons to be against instant replay. It is such a mechanical thing, and this may sound stupid because I'm probably the biggest sports fan and I hate losing worse than anybody on this earth, but there's just something special about having that. How many times have we looked back over the years when an official has made a bad call and cost somebody a major game? I mean, it may be a national championship or a Super Bowl or whatever. And they play that over and over. But it just comes to show you, we're just human, just like anybody else. And you're not a robot when you're doing that job.
Well, I don't know whether it's the right attitude or not, but when you get down to those last few seconds in any kind of athletic contest or whatever, you know, and there's a point here or a point there, if you go back and look at, okay, what happened 39 minutes prior to that? How many free throws did we miss?
Yes.
How many layups did we miss?
How many seconds ran off?
See, you know, that sort of thing. Well, if you hadn't had those mistakes, you wouldn't be in the situation that you're in the last 10 or 15. But that's not the way it works. And
well, it's the same thing in a game. Say if you're a ball player and you're a quarterback and you've hit 15 in a row and you've got your team ready to win the national championship, and then all of a sudden that one bad throw goes wrong, nobody remembers the 15 in a row anymore. They only remember that very last one. And I am the worst example. I still remember when Tennessee was playing Notre Dame, was down on the way back, ready to beat them in that very last second, and poor old Andy Kelly throws that bad pass. And he's the only reason they got that far to start with.
One of the classic, I guess I'll say, high school basketball games, when I was a senior, I guess it was, and Central was playing at Tech in the old gym, playing against Livingston.
Yes.
And Central was down, I think down 1 point. That was before the three-point shot. Mm-hmm. And there were a matter of 2 or 3 seconds, I think, left on the clock. And the inbounds pass came from the far end of the floor to Andy Adams, and he took one or two dribbles and shot it and made it. Derwood Vaughn, who I think in the same category that I would put Lee Pate as a coach and as a human being. Mm-hmm. And you know how we all think, of Mr. Pate.
Right.
And he and I have talked about that play, did talk about that play many, many times when I would go up and referee at Livingston. But it was, now, if we'd had an instant replay, would the clock have gone? I don't know. But we didn't, and so that's the way it played. And Central, I believe that was a regional championship, I think.
And we won.
And we won by 1 point.
So everything was right.
Well,
we did win.
We did win, yeah. I guess it was right. Nobody, there wasn't any way to question it. Nobody could go back and say, well, let's look at the replay back in 1963.
You know, at that time, basketball and baseball and football were such a major part of the community because we didn't have ESPN and all that other stuff around here. The neighborhoods were closer, but the thing about it is people were so emotional over those games back then.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you lost, you would be down for 3 or 4 weeks or maybe even months because your team lost. And I can remember some pretty good worldwide wrestling and all that stuff after the game or during the game. And if you were an official, you better get out of there quick and you better have some protection on your way out.
It's your head. And I don't know that it's – well, there are certainly games today that those officials have to have that protection as well. But I guess the protection is better. You know, a lot of times during – games, they'll talk about if things are tight, if the crowd is getting really, really at one exit off the gym floor at Murphy, they will get the officials' attention and they say, we're going out the other exit as a protection for their part.
Have you ever felt an official really was in danger at any of your games that you had?
I don't know that I would say any of them are really in danger. There are some fans that are a lot more boisterous than others. And we have some at the college games, and I could name a few, but...
Can you hear...
Oh.
Now, I've got behind you on up about 30 rows. Can you hear the conversations when they're hollering at the particular coaches that they don't like? And sometimes they know all the officials' last names.
If it's a timeout, yeah. There's one gentleman that sits right behind us on the front row. And I'm not going to call him by name, but he gets on the officials constantly.
I know who you're talking about.
And we got last year at one of the games. Of course, we meet with the officials before the game, and we were telling him, telling the officials about it. And sure enough, he came out, and I don't know, it may have been Tommy's. I don't know. It's one of them that we knew well. And they were standing, of course, looking at us, and they were right behind us with the gentleman. And I just pointed the official, and I turned around and pointed to him, and it got all over him. But he laughed, and he cut up, and he had a good time with it, and,
it's all in good fun.
That's exactly right, and that's what counts.
Butch, great show. Always fun.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it.
You want to keep on going? Brian doesn't have
anything to do. Hey, Brian doesn't have anything to do. He's just going to talk about something going on in the community.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to know, are you going to have a hard time getting here when they change you to early morning? Are you going to be able to get up?
Brian promised me that every morning when I get here at 8:30 or whatever time it is, and of course my show starts at 9 o'clock on the 30th of this month.
Okay.
It'll be 9 o'clock from now on, 9 a.m.
With Larry Stewart.
Larry Stewart's going to be the very first one.
Okay.
And Brian promised me we'll have coffee, cream, and sugar every morning waiting on us when we get here.
Fresh donuts. You're so sweet, you don't need sugar.
Did you hear what
I heard what he said. He said, you're so sweet, you don't need sugar.
There's going to be a beating on this show for when I leave.
There may be some folks that would question that, Brian.
A lot.
Uh-huh.
We will see you guys tomorrow.
Who you got tomorrow?
And tomorrow I have Greg Tucker on.
Ah.
And
that's always a good show.
Oh, gosh.
Always good.
Everybody, when they hear he's going to be on there, they turn on the dial to 1450 or...
He
what, 100.5 or
he is so knowledgeable.
101.9.
101.9.
It's even written on
you
your shirt.
You always know a professional. We'll see you guys tomorrow.